Welcome to the Whiskey Congress. Honest, open talk dedicated to speaking the truth to those who are open to hearing it.
Black, white, right, left.
Most importantly, honest, bold, and fueled by good whiskey. In Whiskey Veritas, we are Whiskey Congress. Join the evolution.
Whiskey Congress is back in session, and I'm looking forward to talking today because we're not talking politics. We're just going to have fun. Steve and I are friends above all else, and we usually sometimes just shoot the shit and talk and have a cigar or have some whiskey, whatever. And we just talk about things that we enjoy running our yaps about. And I said, let's talk about athletes that are over and underrated in our opinion. And I'm looking forward to this because I've looked at some numbers and it'll be interesting. Anyway, man, how you doing?
I'm good. Just had some quality steaks.
We did.
Tag team effort. You brined them, and I smoked and seared them. So,
and they were fantastic.
They were, and they were the perfect size.
Meaning like massive.
they
were big.
They were big, but I mean, but I feel like that was just the right amount. I don't feel full and overly stuffed, but I don't feel like I'm going to need to, you know, go ravage a village of children later either.
Excellent. I'd prefer that the children of the greater Cleveland area were safe. but anyway, they were really good. It was good having dinner with you, man. And now let's talk some sports. I want to start with overrated and go to underrated on sports. And I want to like to start with baseball. So we're gonna do baseball, basketball, football, and boxing.
Okay.
In that order. And I'm looking forward to this. I'll give you the choice to either kick off or receive. So you want me to start or do you want to start?
You start.
All right. Let me first define my version of overrated because people get really mad at me when I say this. Overrated means not that you suck, not that you don't deserve accolades, but your legend or the overall talk about an individual is overhyped or statistically not accurate.
Okay.
And my overrated baseball player is Nolan Ryan. Nolan Ryan
have lost your fucking mind.
I know you're. Oh, wait till we get to football. He was great. I mean, he deserves to be put in the all-time greats, whatever. But he was 324 and 292, so basically a 500 pitcher. He had over 3.0 ERA. He was dominant in a lot of games and really wild in some games. He was terrifying in his time, and he lasted forever, and I give him credit for those great numbers. But people make it sound like, you know, every game he threw was a virtual no-hitter. And, like, no, he was a damn good pitcher who, from a physical standpoint, I respect the hell out of him because he lasted forever. I mean, he pitched, I think, over four decades. So I get why people give him the hype and the accolades. Having said that, there are so many pitchers today who do what he did. He pitched in an era where there weren't steroids and amphetamines rampantly through the game where guys couldn't catch up to the 96-mile-an-hour fastball. I mean, he threw 95, 96 in a time when no one else did.
And he did it for
a long time.
20 years.
20 years, yeah. Again, he's great, but the legend that he carries overhypes him, in my opinion.
So I have to debate that just because...
Please?
There's multiple things that go into a guy being legendarily good. And it's moments. And it's like you can break it down and you can look at the stats, which is what gets baseball purists in trouble, I think, with anyone, you know, that's really, it, you know, like to fans and people that played the sport because, you know, you just want to break it down by numbers. It's like, well, see, his ERA was over 3 by it was 3.2.
Like 3.2, by the way, is still damn good. I'm not insulting that.
Right, I mean,
it
was a really good
fucking
pitcher.
It was a 500 pitcher.
Okay, but he also, I mean, there's a lot that goes into that with pitchers. And Nolan Ryan is a 500 pitcher, but how many complete games does he have?
That's a good point.
Because you said that he's doing, like, what he did, pitchers, there's no pitcher that's throwing, like, it's a...
That's a good point.
...big deal. If a pitcher throws a complete game.
Yeah.
Not a complete game shutout, not a no-hitter, but a complete game. Right?
Right.
ESPN will cut to a pitcher throwing a complete game. So Nolan Ryan did it night in and night out. And he was like, yeah, he could be wild and everything else, but again, a 3 point, like 20 years and his ERA was 3.2. Are you fucking crazy?
Again, I'm just saying.
Like I remember Nolan Ryan pitching, he was almost 50, right? And the guy,
I think he was 44.
Like, yeah, but I mean, he was 50 is an exaggeration, right, but I mean, he's in his middle 40s, mid 40s, older than I am right now, still pitching. And he was on the mound, and I can't remember. It was a younger player that ended up being a relatively well-known guy. And, you know, you could tell that the kid was, like, licking his chops, thinking that, oh, yeah, I'm going to – right? And Ryan got 1, 2, 3, gone.
Okay.
I just – like, Nolan Ryan's one of my favorites.
Okay.
He never played for a team that, you know, I was a particular fan of, but I just – he's one of the guys that I always enjoyed watching pitch.
I enjoyed, too. Again, everyone on my list, good and bad, or over and under, I should say good and bad, are great players because I'm looking at parsing out the top. I didn't come up with anyone who just plain sucked and said, well, why does this guy get any hype? Until we get to boxing, and we'll talk about that.
Okay.
Anyway, who's your baseball overrated?
So I love this person. I love them.
Okay. Fair.
But in terms of their baseball career, Bo Jackson is very overrated. If you look at the strikeouts, his batting average was never above like 270.
Yeah, somewhere around there.
He hit home runs, but
and
if he wasn't,
he did, it was
right. I mean, he hit home runs that may still be in orbit, but he wasn't doing much else.
I disagree. Phenomenal defensive player.
No. He had a cannon of an arm.
Yes.
And he did some really amazing things, like fucking defying the laws of gravity and physics by running up and around a wall. But, like, Bo Jackson wasn't a great defender, right? Like,
He covered a lot of ground, man.
Yeah, he covered a lot of ground, but the problem was he couldn't track the fucking ball consistently, right?
He was fucking fast, though.
Right. I mean, he was good. He was amazing, right? For a guy to be able to play football and baseball and be as good as he was at football
without fucking a spring, without, I said spring training, fuck, without training camp, without anything. He literally finished baseball and then played NFL football at an all-star level. But I get your point.
But, I mean, I think Deion Sanders was a much better baseball player.
Oh, this is going to be trouble later.
Deion Sanders was a better baseball player than Bo Jackson was a baseball player. Now, Deion was able to do it longer, and I mean, Bo got, you know, I mean,
a horrific injury,
injured,
right.
And he wasn't the same after that, but he still came back after it. I love Bo Jackson, great athlete, but in terms of him as a baseball player, just not, you know, not,
yeah, fair,
not
fair. And he is legendary and maybe doesn't deserve it in the baseball arena.
I think he deserves to be legendary because he played the two sports, what he was able to do in college, and then even what he did in the NFL the short amount of time that he was there. I think because of the short amount of time he was there is one of the reasons why he's not in the Hall of Fame.
Absolutely. I mean, he's got so many legendary, like you said, legendary moments.
Right.
And I would argue Bo Jackson is the best athlete I have ever watched do anything. I mean,
I don't know how you. It's
a
hard argument.
You could
throw
Carl Lewis out there. You could throw.
I mean, Carl Lewis did. He ran fast and he jumped far.
Right.
But I mean, like Bo Jackson. Like Carl Lewis couldn't do anything that Bo Jackson could do. Like he was maybe a little faster than Bo. But I mean, and
he was. But
he was
a little.
Right. I mean, but only a little bit. And I mean, I don't think that there's anything else that Carl Lewis could do, or there's anything else that Bo Jackson could do that Carl Lewis could. Right.
That's fair. And Bo Jackson is a natural athlete who barely worked out.
No, he worked out.
But he didn't lift weights.
He didn't lift weights. I mean, he just ran, jumped, and, you know, push-ups. And, like, him and Herschel Walker are just freaks. And that's why, you know, when I injured my arm, you know, and we were locked down and everything else, like, I was doing push-ups. And I said, you know, if I can get to a point where I can do 100 push-ups, you know, 4 or 5 times a week, then I think I'll be okay when I go back to the gym. And sure enough, like,
you're back, baby.
Right, you know?
But, yeah, I mean, but Herschel Walker, not to jump topics, would do 1,500 in a workout, but he was also a freak of nature that did not make my list. All right, so do you want to do your underrated guy or you want mine?
You.
Ken Griffey Jr. He gets a lot of accolades, but he was so fucking good. Lasted a lot longer than people can credit for. Hit 630 home runs. Almost 2,800 hits, And when people say, who's the greatest baseball player of all time, had he not gotten hurt,
I think he'd be right.
Yeah, he was so fucking good.
There's no doubt. I mean, and
like he belongs just, to the DiMaggio
right, conversation. I mean, and he had, what, 3 seasons robbed because of injury?
Right.
So you, there's that, but I mean, there's also the fact that Ken Griffey just had the best swing I've ever seen. Yes, he did. Right? I mean, it's just video game perfect. Like, if you had to design it, his swing was just the swing. And, I mean, it was just great to watch. And when he was healthy, he was amazing. But, you know, he
also just, great defensive player.
He was.
10 Golden Gloves, by the way. I mean, people argue that stat, but
I don't.
He covered ground. I think he had a cannon for an arm, too.
Yeah.
And he also was just a great ambassador for the game. And then, you know, when he went back to Cincinnati, I thought that was really cool just because of his dad playing there. But people don't give him, in my opinion, the credit he deserves. Again, he gets a lot of credit, Hall of Famer, whatever. But when you say, name the greatest of all time, no one says his name. And I get it because of the injury factor.
Right.
Having said that, dude was a freak.
He was. And I love Ken Griffey. You know, I mean, he also had the family connection between his dad and I think Billy Mays was his uncle.
Willie Mays. Yeah,
Willie. Or Willie Mays. Yeah. Sorry.
Uncle or Billy Mays? Billy Mays. Here. Yeah. The guy who sold ChamWow was, fact, not his uncle.
Well, there's a South Park where Billy Mays is stuck in purgatory and harassing.
Oh, okay. This is why we do these separate shows. You don't want to hear us bitch about politics or whatever. It's Let's true. Talk about Billy Mays.
I watched it just like I woke up the other night. I woke up on the couch and it was on, and so I stayed up like extra. It was like 2:30 in the morning. I like was dying laughing, and then I went to bed.
Okay, good choice. All right, your underrated baseball player.
So mine is a hometown choice, but I think Omar Vizquel. You know, he's another guy who played for 20 years, 11 Golden Gloves. You know, at shortstop, he always got overshadowed by, you know, the Derek Jeters and the Alex Rodriguez.
Right.
But, I mean, the guy defensively was just literally a wizard. I watched him up close and personal for years. He was amazing. Omar Vizquel, I feel like, just retired, like, yesterday. But he... I mean, he just was defensively, he was great. He doesn't get a lot of credit offensively. And he wasn't amazing on offense, but I mean, he had a very, you know, respectable offensive career.
It was a defensive position.
So yeah, I mean, right. I mean, he hit over 280 8 different times, hit more than 30 doubles 4 times, and he led the league in sacrifices, 3 times? And you didn't need him to be a great offensive player on the team
Jim
that
Tomey
he was on.
And right, Manny Ramirez, Albert, you know, Albert Bell.
Right, I mean, so Sandy Alomar, Robbie Alomar at one point. Like, I mean, David Justice, you know, post-Halle Berry drama.
Right.
So, I mean, you know, he's a guy who I think because of the time that he played and the guys who were in that position – he just, you know, gets overshadowed a little bit.
There was a great line I remember listening to. Alex Rodriguez was getting interviewed in his young days, and he gets asked the question, what would it take for you to win a gold glove? And his response was, I need to shoot Omar Vizquel.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good call. Ready to move on to basketball.
Yeah.
All right. My overrated basketball player, and this is going to get really fun, because Scottie Pippen.
You're... fucking crazy.
No, oh I'm not. Okay. Scottie Pippen, when he didn't have Michael Jordan running the show, was, again, great player, belongs in the Hall of Fame, cool, I mean, out of Central Arkansas, didn't, you know, have a whole lot of accolades coming out or any, played on a great team with a great coach. He was a very good defensive player who most of the time had a defensive stopper in Rodman or others to take some of the pressure off him. Not to mention Jordan was a great defensive player. To me, I really have a beef with Scottie Pippen because when he was the team stud, when Jordan was off with the Birmingham Barons, he had that moment where he didn't want to go on the floor in the playoffs because he wasn't getting the ball for the final shot. And I don't respect him for that. Again, I'm not saying he's not a worthy Hall of Famer. I'm saying he was never a guy who carried a team. And people put him in the top 50 all time, and I just cannot go along with that at all.
See, that's I hate those takes because it's a, you're saying it's a personality issue. The guy on the floor, like, statistically on the floor, you can't really argue with the numbers. And then even when Jordan wasn't there, like, Jordan was the key piece to that team. I mean, you're taking away, like, think about it. When you take LeBron away from teams, they go, they get the first round draft, they get the first pick of the first round.
Yep.
Right? Like, they become lottery teams.
And they fuck it up half the time.
Okay, but either way, like, you take LeBron away from teams, they become lottery teams.
Yes.
Right? You took Jordan away, and they were still in the playoffs and, you know, vying to go to the finals again. Right?
Did they go that far? I don't remember.
I mean, they went to the second, third round of playoffs.
Okay.
And then when he went to the Trailblazers, again, they were, I mean, they were a team that was, again, close to, you know, going to the championship again. So, look. You want to make the argument that he was a brat and he was whiny or whatever you're saying.
And personality is one thing. When you bail on your team in the playoffs, okay, that's not just personality. That's quitting.
Oh, okay, but that doesn't take away to. I mean, like, I disagree.
Okay,
I mean, because there's plenty of people who would want Scottie Pippen on their team, and listen, did you watch the documentary on Jordan?
I did not.
Okay. You get more, there's more backstory to that than just Scottie didn't want to go in because he wasn't getting the ball. Like, there's a lot going on behind the scenes. And you had a group of people. It's wild. It's something that you need to watch. And I think it'll change your mind about Scottie Pippen, but it gives you more insight into that moment, and then I think it takes a little bit away from it.
He shows up all the time on top 50 of all-time lists, and I just can't put him there.
Yeah.
And that's why I put him as overrated. Again, I'm not saying he doesn't suck. I'm not saying he sucks. I'm not saying he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame. I'm saying to elevate him to the level of the guys I'm about to bring up in the underrated is why I have a beef with how he gets viewed historically. Not trashing the guy? Just saying.
No, you're definitely trashing the guy.
All right, I am trashing. You're trashing
multiple times.
Okay. Who is your overrated basketball player?
Paul Pierce.
Interesting.
Paul Pierce is, oh my God, he's one of the most overrated players of all time. I just, like, I'm a workout guy. He's clearly not. So that immediately to me is just like, you shouldn't even be in the fucking NBA. Like, he was always just soft and doughy looking to me. So that's problem number one. Okay. But then.
All-time great three-point shooter.
He was a good three-point shooter. He's not all-time great. He had a lot of moments, but, I mean, his shooting percentage from the three-point line is not all-time fucking great. I just don't like Paul Pierce as a player. I didn't like his game. I thought his game was very... He did a lot of preserving energy, let's just say.
So here's where the workout thing comes in. He wasn't in shape, so he couldn't be... baseline to baseline, hustle, defender.
Right. I mean, and he's a good shit talker. And he came up big in key moments. There's no doubt about it. But listen, Celtics before Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen get there, they were a decent team. They were kind of naggy, but they weren't that great. He wasn't carrying them. He wasn't going to get them over the hump. You get Kevin Garnett, you get Ray Allen. They make it. They win one title.
Right.
And then, you know, after that, it's, you know, LeBron goes to Miami and it's a wrap. And so, and the funny thing is Paul Pierce will talk about LeBron going to these teams and getting all these players to play
stacking
with him.
Right.
You know, like he did it with you know, D. Wade and Chris Bosh, and then came back to Cleveland with, you know, Kevin Love and Kyrie Irving. But, I mean, like, you were the first to do it in this generation, Paul. I mean, you couldn't win shit without...
I would argue Jordan, Pippen, and Rodman.
Well, no, because...
They didn't orchestrate it the same way, okay.
Fair. No, I mean, like, because, I mean, the rules were different.
Two were drafted, but, right.
Yeah, fair. I mean, like, they were drafted together. I mean, like, you know, Kevin Garnett was a centerpiece in Minnesota, and then they brought in Ray Allen. So I have issue with him overall. Like, statistically, he's, you know, he's very good. He's up there. But I think he gets just way too much credit, and they also won one title. And it's funny because he likes to call out LeBron. It's just like, bitch, what, like, what grounds are you doing this? But
anyway. Well, and the thing about Paul Pierce, and I did not obviously have him on my list, but he falls into a category that gets typically called an accumulator. You played for a long time. You like Rafael. I don't want to talk about Rafael Palmeiro, but his numbers are amazing. But he played forever and he was very good for a long time. But he was never superstar. And yeah. That's kind of true about Paul Pierce, too. It's like,
I disagree about Paul Pierce being an accumulator because towards the end, Paul Pierce wasn't accumulating shit. His days with the Clippers, and I think he played with maybe a couple other teams. Like, Paul Pierce wasn't racking up enough numbers to where it was mattering, you know? I mean, he was he was averaging like 7-8 points a game. So I don't think that's significant
enough. He also did survive a near fatal stabbing.
Yeah. I wonder why that happened, Paul.
All right, let's not go there, although we both know a little bit about that. I even know who did it. And so do you.
So do I.
Were you in Massachusetts at that time? You probably were.
No, I think it was happening as I was getting there.
So because I remember I was in Massachusetts in 2001-2002, and I remember talking about it. It must have happened a year before or two. That. Anyway, my underrated.
You got stabbed by a guy named Ben Zeno.
Allegedly. One of the made men, laziest gangster name ever. My underrated, and again, this could cause some trouble, but Oscar Robertson should be mentioned among the greatest of all time. And you look at the all-time list.
Oh, you're calling him underrated.
Underrated. Yes.
Oh, yes.
I was about your eyes got huge. I'm like, what? Because he averaged a triple-double for a season and nearly averaged a triple-double for his career. Scored points. He grabbed boards. He moved the ball around, got assists. This guy was freakishly good. Now, it's before my time. I only know numbers and highlights. But that he is not regularly mentioned on the Mount Rushmore argument is crazy. He was ridiculously good. Excuse me. Ridiculously good. And he scored. He wasn't. Magic Johnson was a triple-double machine.
Right.
But Magic Johnson would be a 15-point, 10-assist, 10-rebound guy. Magic Johnson rightly does belong in the Mount Rushmore conversation. In fact, he's on it for me. But Oscar Robertson was Magic Johnson before there was a Magic Johnson, only he scored 25 to 30 points a game while doing that other shit.
Also, so, Oscar Robertson was basically LeBron before LeBron.
Yeah, not quite as big, but...
I mean, just looking at the stat lines and, he was 6'5".
Right.
And, over, 200-plus pounds, which, back then, playing point guard was huge.
And he was a point guard who got boards.
And he could move. Oscar Robertson is probably, the closest prototype to LeBron in terms of just all around athleticism and ability to dominate.
Is a big-time scorer who could also distribute. Will not ever disrespect Magic Johnson's game because I think he's arguably, if I was going to start a team with a player in his prime, it would be Magic Johnson because he could play all five positions.
Right.
Oscar Robertson, to me, was that. He wasn't obviously as tall, but was just amazing statistically. And I was going through a stat line today and looking at the number of years where he was doing this, and he just deserves way more credit than he gets, in my opinion. I thought about arguing for Larry Bird because Larry Bird's injuries took away from what he was. In his prime, Larry Bird was ridiculous.
I don't think Larry Bird's underrated.
It depends on who you're talking to. In Boston, he's the greatest player ever to step on a basketball court. I just think that
his career got cut short. I mean, he gets a lot of reverence in the league.
He and Magic Johnson really built the NBA the NBA. So yeah, you're right. That's why Oscar Robertson got the nod.
Right. Good call. Right. We're doing underrated.
Your NBA underrated NBA player, yes.
My underrated NBA player is Clyde Drexler.
I thought about him.
Clyde the Glide. He's one of those, 10-time All-Star, 26.3 points a game, 7 rebounds a game, 7 assists. He just was, not only a great player, but just such a great ambassador for the sport. He won a title in 95. He's on the Dream Team. He's one of those guys who stood out to me. Again, not my team, but I just, one of those guys that I remember from that 90s era who, you know, if anybody was going to be Jordan, you thought maybe it would be Clyde Drexler on that Trailblazer team, you know, and they had a shot at it. Houston. And, you know, yeah, I mean, Houston, but it was, that was...
Olajuwon's. Yeah, it was after. Yeah. It was Olajuwon's team.
Yeah, because, I mean, that was 95, so I think that was the year, that was actually the year that Jordan, you know, was playing for the Barons with Terry Francona.
A little Cleveland flavor there.
Yes, and... you know, there's a great clip in that that Jordan documentary of Terry Francona doing an interview for the Barons. Like, he's like the third base coach, and he's doing an interview talking about Michael Jordan as a player.
Okay.
And then during the interview, Jordan hits like a triple.
Okay.
And makes it. And I mean, there's you know, a conversation for another day. But a lot of people like to talk about how bad Jordan was as a baseball player, but the reality was he was developing into being a better player, and I think he was such a good athlete that I think in time, you know, he probably would have been better than a lot of people. I mean, sure. People love to...
It's fun to trash the greatest of all time, right?
Yes, I mean, it's just, it's the, you know, like, I can't pick on you for anything else, so I'm going to pick on you for this.
We were in your house watching Tom Brady suck at golf and loving it. I was loving it. Maybe you weren't, but I was fucking
yes.
loving it.
Oh, yeah, when they did the yes.
Peyton Manning, Tom Brady.
It was hard for me to love, though, because it was just such a terrible day, right? I mean, it was just so stormy. And then it was also...
He also holed out from 150 yards, the fuck.
Yes, Tom Brady. Right. Like, as you were talking shit about him, like, he...
Along with Charles Barkley.
Right. I mean, he drills it. But the best part about that whole situation was Tiger Woods and his, like, little side comments that they were barely catching on the microphone.
But I'm with you on Drexler being underrated. Like I said, he was on my list of guys to consider. And I think the part of the reason he was, no disrespect, Jordan Light. He was basically the yeah. same player, super athletic, could, you know, take off from the free throw line and throw it down, could shoot, play D. But he was overshadowed by his teammate when he won a title.
Yeah.
Olajuwon was also an all-time great.
Right.
And so...
And he had come over from... He from had come Portland, over from right. Portland at that point in time. And Portland made... you know, a couple runs
right.
while he was there, but I mean, they just, you know,
didn't quite get there.
Right.
All right. NFL time. This is going to be fun or not. My overrated NFL player, Deion Primetime Sanders. Yes, he was a phenomenal cover man, but people put him on a pedestal like he took away half the field. You couldn't catch the ball with him. No, he didn't. He first of all, I'm going to quote Jay-Z and say, he couldn't break a grape in a fruit fight. Couldn't bust a grape in a fruit fight, sorry. He wouldn't tackle anyone. He avoided contact. With the ball in his hands, he was dynamic as fuck. He was a great cover man. He got way more safety help than people realize. And if you look at the numbers, like, first of all, Dave in Philly, who I'm great friends with, he and I have had this fight for literally 20 years. And... just the people worship this guy like he was the most amazing cornerback ever to play the game. I'm going to throw one at you and say Rod Woodson was so much better than Deion. He was physical. He was tough. He was also a great return man, also a great cover man. And Deion Sanders was one of the best marketed players in sports history. He came out of college as prime time, and Chris Berman and Tom Jackson would do prime time. Again, not saying he was a phenomenal cover man. I'm not saying he doesn't belong in the Hall of Fame or anything stupid like that. But the legend that surrounds him did not equal the reality.
Except almost every quarterback in the NFL who played against him says it was legit. So...
I think I'm better informed than them.
Okay. Well, I mean, you can
I'm fucking around. You know,
you can continue to live in this fantasy land. But the reality is that Deion was actually... He was one of the greatest corners
he's
to ever play the game.
He's among them. He's not... All right.
Yeah, he did transcend the game. Jim, you'd never seen a guy as fast as him. I mean, you had Daryl Green, and Daryl Green was really fast, and Daryl Green was a really good player, but he wasn't Deion. He couldn't do what Deion did. I mean, Deion could literally let you... could lag behind a receiver for 10, 15 yards. Quarterback would think the guy was open, and then Deion comes out of nowhere, takes it with one hand.
All
right. I mean, like, that's not an exaggeration. No. Like, you could watch... I could pull up it on NFL films on YouTube right now. Right? I mean, it just, like, what... The things that Deion was able to do and what he allowed the defenses to do when he was on the field... Like, you can't, discount it. Like, there's like that Atlanta
team. He jumped from team to team.
First of all, that Atlanta team that he was on, like from the corner position, he elevated that team to like a level that that you can argue they probably shouldn't have even been, because they were that much better defensively because of what he was able to do. Right, I mean, and because it wasn't just what he, I mean, and yet, did he tackle? No, I mean, he's legendary. He said, "Listen, that was a business decision. Like my body and my ability to be fast and speed, that was everything. So, am I going to risk a knee or an ankle tackling somebody when we have 10 other guys who can do it? No, I'm not. Okay, selfish, but listen, makes sense. I mean, the NFL is, you know, they weren't making the money then that those guys are now, even though it was still a lot of money." And so you don't like it as a team guy, but as a business decision, he wasn't necessarily wrong. But just looking at what he did and what he allowed defenses to do, whether it was San Francisco or Dallas or even, you know, towards the end, he, you know, just bounced around too much. But even his, you know, even...
He jumped to already great teams, and yeah, he made them better.
Yeah, but I mean, that's like great players playing on great teams. Like we're mad at that now?
No,
like,
I'm not mad at it. I'm not mad at it. I'm just saying, yeah, all right, so here's my, this is going to go horribly wrong, but I remember downloading a Deion Sanders highlight clip and then downloading a Nate Clements highlight clip. Nate Clements was a fucking freak of nature also. Also tackled people, also returned balls, also did this.
Nate Clement was a very good corner.
He also set a record for the biggest contract for a cornerback in history. Not that money means everything, and not that that's true anymore. But Nate Clements was great. And if I had a choice of Nate Clements or Deion, I would have chosen Nate Clements.
And you would also be one of the GMs on ESPN, which people would be like, why the fuck is this guy on? He was a terrible fucking GM.
Your turn, sir.
overrated NFL player. Let me scroll down. Joe Willie Namath.
That is 100% accurate.
Joe Willie Namath had a amazing, magical moment that will forever be in NFL folklore, and it was such a big moment that I have no issue with him being in the NFL Hall of Fame, but he was a really average quarterback. And that's just it. I mean, now I put Eli Manning in that same position. You know, he had two magical runs at Super Bowls that you can't deny. I mean, and the moments were so amazing, you know, beating an undefeated Patriots team and then coming back and then beating the Patriots again. You know, sure. To that point, the Patriots seemed unbeatable in playoff games.
Right.
You know, but really, he was an average quarterback.
Meaning Namath. I mean, you can say both, but
Manning.
Okay.
I mean, both Manning and Namath. And I
went back and forth. You've argued both sides of that, the Manning thing.
No, my position is consistent on Manning. Like, listen, yes, he's an average quarterback.
Is he a Hall of Famer?
Yes.
Okay.
That's because, and the reason why is just like, listen. You like people say, oh, well, he just had those two moments. Yeah, but they were the biggest moments in the history of the sport.
True.
Right? Super Bowl is the pinnacle of the game. So when your moments are that big and you have that much of a spotlight on you, and you for Manning, he did it twice.
Right.
Right?
Against all-time great teams. The Colts in Super Bowl III were pretty damn good.
And I'm saying the same thing for Namath. I have no issue with him being in the Hall of Fame because of that moment. That is something that is worth commemorating, and he deserves all of it in terms of recognizing it for that moment. But when you go back and look at his stats, and even though it was a time where they didn't throw the ball as much, he really wasn't that good.
He was also a legendary drunken womanizer.
Right.
The Bills beat him multiple times because he had teammates that went to Alabama with him.
Yes.
And they would get him shit-faced the night before the game.
I mean, and he's been on local radio here, and he's been really open and honest about, you know, some of his shortcomings as a player and as a womanizer and you know, his battles with alcohol and things like that. And they're great stories. I mean, he did a 45-minute segment with the ESPN crew here on the Really Big Show, and they didn't go to commercial because, I mean, it was just amazing to listen to his stories of that time. And so as much as I like the guy, although I was a little peeved at him that he creeped out Susie Culver because she was, you know,
that was awful.
Right. I mean,
I actually met him at his worst.
Oh, that's not good.
He was at the company I worked for made a non-steroidal anti-inflammatory drug that he was our celebrity spokesperson for.
The Voltaren?
No, it was meloxicam.
I'm sorry, I don't even know what I meant.
Anyway, so he came to our plant to do like a photo op, and the there was a raffle, and if you put your name in, you had a chance to get an autographed Joe Namath football and get a photo op with him.
Mm-hmm.
And a guy named Dwayne won. And
he looked. I don't know why that's funny.
It's going to get worse.
The way you said
it's going to get worse, okay. Because he looked at it and said, "Oh, it's Dwayne. I thought it was Diane, and then I would have given you your real present." I'm like, "My God, dude, you are doing a public appearance. You're trashed, and you're literally saying, I want to fuck someone here today." And there were chicks, by the way, falling over to get near that guy.
I'm sure.
I mean, it was not quite Frank Sinatra shit, but it was chicks jumping through hoops wanting to fuck this guy. But yeah, he made it very clear during his visit to Columbus, Ohio, that he would be more than happy to find a place to put Joe Willie in a place that Joe Willie maybe didn't necessarily belong in from his perspective or the perspective of the potential lady. And to say that on the fucking stage when we're doing it, he was like, dude, that's just a bad look. And that was like 27-year-old me, which we don't want to talk about my decision-making and behavior at the time. Or maybe we do, but let's not. But yeah, you're right, though. His statistics were not great. And truthfully, he didn't win that Super Bowl. He guaranteed it, talking cocky. That defense won that game.
Absolutely.
And that defense carried that team.
Yes.
And you're right. It was different. Football was different,
yeah,
then.
Yeah, it was different.
But still, he did not carry teams. I mean, fast forwarding a little bit and throwing a bone to a Steelers fan. Terry Bradshaw, statistically, you could point to all kinds of stuff, but that guy stood there. He was the focus of that offense and put the ball up in the air. Joe Namath was not that guy.
Right.
And yet, you're right. He does have a legendary place in football. So, good call on that one. Ready for my football underrated?
Yes.
Going total homer here. Cornelius Bennett. People don't really put him on the list. And if you look at numbers, which, by the way, his numbers were pretty impressive. He lasted forever. He is one of the best athletes ever to play the game. I'll put him up there with Bo Jackson. I will not say Deion Sanders was not an all-time great athlete. Cornelius Bennett was a freak, and he could do so many things. There was one year that Bruce Smith got hurt, and they literally changed the defense in Buffalo. They called it the Sic'em defense and basically just said, okay, everybody, just take up space, eat up blockers, and let Cornelius Bennett go destroy people. And he did. He would take out, he would run down running backs. Daryl Talley, another all-time Bills legend, said that he would like watch Cornelius Bennett make a bad decision, completely run himself out of a play, and then come from behind and catch people from behind, including like wide receivers. He got beat on a wide receiver sweep once and caught Mark Duper from the Dolphins from behind as a linebacker. That guy does Duper. Not get in the... In the respect he deserves.
Haven't heard that name since Super Tecmo Bowl.
But he was fast.
Yes, he was.
And Cornelius Bennett ran him down after over pursuing a play. And he would get sacks. He would pick balls off.
Cornelius Bennett, I don't disagree with you. He was an amazing player. I think Cornelius Bennett was one of those guys who kind of was held back because of one of his teammates, right? Because they had Bruce Smith, they didn't necessarily need the pass rush, right?
Right.
Like, I mean, because like you didn't need to rush the passer with a linebacker. You could have an extra guy in coverage, which ultimately ended up giving Bruce Smith more time to, pick up the tackle, throw him over to the sideline, and go slap the quarterback. So, I mean, I think that's one of the reasons why he suffers a little bit, because he doesn't have the sack numbers, because he just didn't. It was something he didn't need to do.
He could do so many other things.
Right.
One of my favorite stories, I was talking to a friend from the Cleveland Bills backers bar, and he said the best play John Elway ever made was a ball that he didn't snap. It was a tight game. Elway is under center, and according to the way this guy described it was, he looks to his left, and he sees Bruce Smith stacked next to Cornelius Bennett. He just went, Timeout. I'm done with this shit.
Nope, not today, Satan. Not exactly. Today.
So that's, and again, I'm being a homer, but Biscuit was amazing and just doesn't get into that conversation of how great he was.
Okay, there's no one who knows that Cornelius' nickname was Biscuit.
Everyone in Buffalo knows that. But
that's fine.
That's why. All right. And now more people know.
So mine is a guy you mentioned earlier, Wade Woodson. I would make, and the reason why I say he's, like, there's a lot of people who acknowledge that he was really good, but I don't think people know how good Rod Woodson was.
I'm glad you and Homer are in the same category.
Yeah, I mean, look.
I also agree with you.
You know, he's all-time leaders in games played as a defensive back, 17 NFL seasons, 71 interceptions, 1,400 interception return yards, 32 fumble recoveries, 15 offensive, 17 defensive, 137 fumble return yards, 4,800 kickoff return yards, 2,300 punt return yards, 17 touchdowns. It just, like, he was, like, Rod Woodson leaving the Steelers was maybe the second most painful sports moment for me, behind Mike Tyson losing.
Okay.
Right. I mean,
to Buster Douglas.
Right. To Buster Douglas. But it just, like, he was, like, people just don't know. Like, the guy was an amazing corner, right? Gets hurt, busts up his knee, ends up going to San Francisco, rehabs, and then comes back and plays in the Super Bowl. Right, I mean, in a time where knee injuries were devastating to players, he ends up coming back and then not only plays but is effective in the playoffs during the process. He was an amazing guy to watch, and he played for 17 seasons, and he was amazing to watch probably for 15 of those years.
In his prime, the Bills and Steelers battled for the AFC a lot. On a Monday night game, Rod Woodson had a pick six, sack strip that led to a touchdown, and basically, as a cornerback, which he won the game. We were talking about Deion a minute ago. Deion took things away, but he didn't take things over. In my opinion, Rod Woodson is the best defensive back ever to play football. You could throw in Ronnie Lott. You could throw in, you know, a couple other guys. I would put Rod Woodson above anyone. And you threw in the special team shit he did was also amazing.
Well,
I'm not a Steelers fan, and I'm saying that.
My only other, it's Ed Reed to me just
sits
on such a high pedestal. Right. I mean, just like if you watch, like, Ed Reed was just a masterful dude to watch. And, like, him and Rod Woodson, like, I'm just putting them both on the same, like, they're both up there, and then they can fight it out. So if I change it
from best defensive back to best corner, would you argue with me?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, because Rod Woodson could cover literally anybody.
And he hit like a freight train. Right. He could come off the edge and go off the quarterback.
Right. I mean, he was just like, he did.
That game against Buffalo, I was at shitty
He went right at Grange.
I was in the Varsity Club in Columbus, if you know that bar. It's a legendary bar. I know
it very well.
I was in that bar with a bunch of Steeler fan friends, just losing my damn mind. And when he caught Jim Kelly from behind on the corner blitz, it felt like it took a minute for that 3-second thing to happen.
Right.
Felt like, here he comes. This is going to be so bad.
Right. It actually took no time at all, which is part of the problem for Jim Kelly.
Right, but, oh.
It just, like,
and I respect the fuck out of the guy because of that.
Yeah, I mean, he was you know, just one of those guys who, again, another great ambassador for the game. And he just commanded so much respect on the field. Like, you had the game plan for him, but the problem was that it was really hard to do because he could move all over. I just love him.
This is, I get it. If I was a Steelers fan, he would be probably my all-time favorite player. He also did something, this is such a dick move, it was hilarious. He did a prank where he had one of his, whoever the corner that was playing opposite him at the time, which I don't remember who it was, he got him onto what he thought was a real talk show, and just set the guy up with prank after prank. Steve Tasker called it and said, thanks for putting my kids through college. And and the whole thing was Kevin Thomas? Is that a name?
I don't know. Okay,
anyway, he had this guy on the show that was all a setup. It was one of those prank shows in the early 90s. And the guy's like, this is worse and worse. And finally Rod Woodson cracks up. And he's like, it's a prank, man. We're just having fun with you.
I don't remember that.
I only saw it because I was living in West Virginia and got a lot of Pittsburgh TV.
Oh, yeah.
No one recorded shit then. There was no YouTube. But I remember thinking that was absolutely hilarious. Kind of a dick move, but in a hilarious way. So I respect the call on. Again, Woodson, you're saying he's underrated. He's ranked way up there, but
right.
Not get the credit he deserves.
Right. I mean, I think, you know, you were saying Deion is overrated, and then you reference Rod Woodson, and I'm not saying I don't believe that Deion was underrated because I don't think you can.
I said overrated.
Or overrated. I mean, because I think that Deion did things for the game that, I mean, he changed a lot. You know, you had seen fast guys before, but you hadn't seen fast guys like Deion. You had seen good cover guys before, but not guys that covered like Deion. Deion also doesn't get credit for his football IQ, right? I mean, Deion knew things that other corners didn't because he knew it. And listen, Deion did the two-sport thing, right?
Sure. Like,
and he did it for a while. I mean, I remember the dude getting helicoptered in.
Right, just two in the same day.
Right.
NFL game and a Major League Baseball playoff game.
Yes. He was amazing. Again, another amazing athlete, but, solid, legit player. And,
all-time
great for a reason.
I'm just saying that people say, half the field was erased. No, it wasn't. Jerry Rice, by the way, blew him up multiple times, and Jerry Rice is the greatest receiver of all time.
Right.
But if you look at the numbers, they played like 18 games against each other, and in those 18 games against each other, Jerry Rice had like 1,600 yards and 15 touchdowns. Those numbers aren't written down, but if Jerry Rice in those games played against Deion one-on-one, which he didn't because he moves around, Jerry Rice was not eliminated from the games the way some people say. We could go on for this for hours.
Okay, but No one did that.
Right. Exactly.
The greatest wide receiver of all time.
Randy Moss would be my counterpoint, but I understand what you're saying. Look, Jerry Rice, all-time great. I mean, statistically the greatest ever. If I had to choose one of those guys for my team, I would choose Randy Moss.
Yeah, I mean, if I'm picking a team, right, just to win one game, then yeah, I'm going to take Randy Moss all day in his prime because you could legitimately just not fucking stop him. But at the same time, like
he could stop him.
Right. I mean, he just stopped himself when he just stopped. But I mean, you know, Jerry Rice was a grinded out, you know, sort of guy, but no one stopped him. Until he got, you know,
until he was 70 years old.
Until he started to grow those weird dreads with the Raiders.
Right. On to boxing. And I'm looking forward to this. So I was torn for my overrated guys. I ended up going with Vladimir Klitschko. And I went with Klitschko. Okay. So I was thinking Ricky Hatton because Ricky Hatton
we were along the same lines here.
Wow. Hatton was a very good fighter who had his career structured well and ended up 45-3. He was a multiple-time world title holder, but boy, when he got into the next level, he got demolished. Yeah. I mean, of those three losses, his loss to Floyd Mayweather was bad.
Brutal.
And his loss to Manny Pacquiao was almost murder.
Right.
But anyway, I'm choosing Vladimir Klitschko because, A, he was a very boring fighter. I mean, his stats are impressive, but he had five losses. One of those losses was to Corey Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
One was to Lehman Brewster, who literally... Klitschko, he followed his brother's footsteps. You know, Vitaly was, in my opinion, an all-time great. And Vladimir, I mixed those two up. Honest to God, I had to look up which one was which while I was doing this. Vladimir had some really bad losses. His fighting style was entirely based on great technical boxer. That jab was savage and the straight right hand was phenomenal. But if he could not outsize you, which at 6'6 or 6'7, whatever he was, he could do to almost everyone, and as soon as he couldn't do that, he had nothing. And, you know, again, would I want to fight Vladimir Klitschko? Fuck no! He's a fucking freak monster with good technical skills, but his defense sucked. His offense made his defense work. His cardio
and conditioning. His defense was just tall.
Tall jab and just, you know, jab followed by straight right, jab followed by straight right. Boring fighter. And any time he fought someone who he couldn't use that approach against, he lost, including the loss to Tyson Fury, where it's like the first time ever you're going in against a guy who you should know this doesn't work. And he stuck with his plan throughout the fight and just got taken apart.
Yes.
And he tasted a lot of leather when he fought bigger guys. You know, again, he's a multiple-time champion, great fighter, but not an all-time great. And the fact that he couldn't manage his cardio. When he lost to Lehman Brewster, I think he had knocked him down two or three times in the fight, and Brewster just got back up.
He never needed to.
Who's that? But right, because you know what I mean? He never got hit.
Right. I mean, it just
but
it
was, when he did, he got lit up, and you know the Klitschkos are a blur. Right.
Because I mean, you can't like if I showed you a picture of the two of them, you could identify them as Klitschkos, but you couldn't tell me which was which.
You are correct.
I couldn't either. I think Vladimir looks older than
Vitaly's old. Vitaly is 5 years
older. I'm sorry, Vitaly looks older than but you get what I'm
perfect
saying.
Perfect example. He fought Corey Sanders, who was a power punching dud, who typically looked like he had had 6 Bud Lights before the fight. And Vladimir
lost. He was on the Paul Pierce workout plan.
There we go. And so Vladimir Klitschko fights Corey Sanders, gets tattooed, just blasted. Mm-hmm. And then Vitaly, his older brother, gets into a shouting match with him over the fight. And then Vitaly comes in, fights Sanders, and annihilates him. And it was one of those things where, like, it's because your defense sucks, other than the fact that you're a monster.
Right.
And so anyway, I think he's overrated, and that was my choice.
Mine, so I went back and forth between Ricky Hatton and this guy, and then I landed on this guy ultimately just because I really think that he hasn't fought anybody, and that's Anthony Joshua.
Oh.
Actually,
he fought.
He fought Klitschko, he fought an old Klitschko.
Right.
At the end of his career, you just talked about Klitschko's weaknesses. Anthony Joshua is a big guy who, you know what I mean? Like, I just... His wins aren't that impressive to me. The field, like the weight class itself, is not overly impressive. He's going to fight Tyson Fury. I think we both think that he's going to get picked apart and he's going to lose. I don't like him as a fighter. He, for his size, he doesn't have a ton of power. I think he's overrated, and partly because of, you know, he's the only really British fighter that. You know,
since Ricky Hatton, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? But I mean,
yeah,
I
think that's crowd gets behind him.
And right, they make noise. And they should, because, again, he is the only one. So, right, go ahead, go nuts. But I watch him fight, and I'm always uneasy. Like, I just feel like at any point in time, he can get caught. He's another guy who doesn't manage his cardio great. You know, he out-cardioed Klitschko, but, I mean...
They just bombed on each other.
Yeah, I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
both guys were down at least twice in that fight.
Right, exactly. But, I mean, that's like saying, I out-jumped you, right? Like, I mean...
No offense taken, in case you were wondering.
Because you're a... do you think you could jump higher than me, Jim?
Not right now.
There's no point in time where you could jump higher
than me. That is not true.
Yeah.
When you were 8 and I was 18, I would have jumped you like a motherfucker.
You hope?
I was an athlete as a kid. Anyway, no, I get your point.
I mean, I could dunk when I was fucking 12.
Okay. I took me till 22. And it was a tennis ball. Actually, volleyball. I took a volleyball at 22. I had 21. Well, there you go.
Could drink and dunk in the same year. Fuck you.
Anthony Joshua, the only pushback I would give is, I don't know, when you say overrated, I don't know how many people really put him on that pedestal.
Oh, the whole fucking UK does.
Right.
I mean, that's fair. I think part of the issue is, because there's nobody else, right? And now you had Deontay Wilder, but there were a lot of people hedged against Wilder because of his fighting style, right? He just threw bombs.
Right.
And, he would take punches, but he would take a lot of punches. But he threw that bomb, and when he connected, it was devastating.
It was Tyson-esque. I mean, it was...
And so I think there were a lot of people who were just like, he's good, but is he good? And so I think Anthony Joshua just benefits from... the lack of competitiveness at the heavyweight level at the moment, and I'm more than willing to bet that Tyson Fury picks him apart when they fight.
I suspect you're right. Now, one quick question before we move on to our last category. If Deontay Wilder fought Vladimir Klitschko, who do you think wins?
So Klitschko doesn't adjust his style.
Agreed. That's why I put him where he was.
He would need to adjust his style to fight Wilder because he would need to close the distance between them. And Klitschko doesn't do that. And so I think the issue would be that Wilder would just continue to throw bombs until he got him, right? And eventually he would. But the issue is that Klitschko will get up.
Yeah,
right? He's like, tough. I mean, I feel like that's the type of guy you could hit with an anvil and he would just kind of stand up.
Anthony Joshua knocked him out, and I think Deontay Wilder would connect one or two times. And I think Deontay would take out Vladimir Klitschko. Now, Vitaly, who is a much smarter...
Different, completely different.
I would put... Deontay Wilder would be 1-1 against the Klitschkos, in my opinion.
Agreed.
All right. Underrated for me. And this is kind of what led to this conversation as we were talking the other day. I don't think Bernard Hopkins gets nearly the respect he deserves. He was so good for so long. He fucked with the system and said, I'm not going to get sucked into the Bob Arum, Don King, if you don't promote me... I can't go anywhere. He just said, I'm going to go out there and fuck up everyone who gets in the ring with me. Great defensive fighter. Had power. Made things happen offensively as well. And maybe this is the old guy in me talking, but he fought till he was 51. Now, he shouldn't have. He stayed too long at the fair, and his final fight was awful to watch. I mean, he was fighting a young, strong guy, and he at that point had old man body. He just looked like an old guy.
Yes.
But he... You know, he beat so many great fighters along the way. He went toe-to-toe with Roy Jones at his best, destroyed Oscar De La Hoya.
I mean, I guess my question would be, though, I don't know. I feel like he gets a lot of respect in the fighting game. I mean...
To people who know the game, yes. But to people who are casual fans, I don't think they appreciate how great that guy was.
There's an argument. How many casual fans are there at boxing?
Okay, that's a different argument. But when he was in his prime... That boxing was much bigger.
Agreed.
And he traveled a bunch of weight classes.
And, I mean, he was always a good draw. Like, I'm not saying... I don't necessarily think that he's undervalued. I think he's appropriately valued. Because of the type of fighter he was, right? Put him in the ring, I'll knock him down. Put him in the ring, I'll knock him down, right? Like, he didn't care about the fanfare. He wasn't about promoting himself. He just went, he's like, I just want to fight. I want to fight, and I'm going to win.
He's so good.
And he was really good at it.
I mean, as someone who appreciates technical boxing, especially when technical boxing is combined with, you know, offense, because, I hate Floyd Mayweather. I don't apologize for that, whatever. But I acknowledge probably the greatest defensive fighter ever.
Mm-hmm.
But he's a boring fighter.
Yeah.
Hopkins was great technically, great defensively, and could put your lights out.
Yeah. I mean, because Hopkins was a guy who... You're not going to land a ton of punches on, which is part of the reason that he was able to box until he was 51.
Right.
And box effectively until probably he was 49, because I feel like I watched him fight. Who did he fight? He was in his late 40s, and he fought someone, and there was concerns, and then he ended up beating...
Jermaine Taylor at one point.
That's the fight I'm thinking of.
Okay. And I think he ultimately fucks up his shoulder fighting Jermaine Taylor, and the fight gets no decision or whatever. But he fought great fighters in their prime... And he had like a, I don't pull numbers out of my ass. I should have written this down. But he had like a 7-year streak where he did not lose a fight.
I think I bring up Bernard Hopkins almost every time we talk about boxing, right?
You and I are both huge boxing fans. And I think if you go to the average guy on the street B-Hop. And say, you know, name the top 10, no one's going to say B-Hop, and they should.
Agreed.
And yours? Underrated boxer. Here we go.
Underrated boxer. I went Timothy Bradley.
Interesting. How much of that was because he got... Well, okay. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, I just... I mean, he was, 33-2-1, over the course of 12 years. He is a boring boxer.
Yes, he is.
But is an effective boxer. And he, he was good defensively. I thought that, he beat some good guys, but some guys that were, towards the end of the rope. But, I mean, there's still...
His decision winning against Pacquiao was the most bullshit decision ever.
Yes, it was. But it's still a win.
It counts.
But I think he gets downgraded because of that fight unfairly. He didn't make the decision.
Right.
Right? And I think people hold it against him.
I do.
And it's like that's not his fault necessarily. And even if you want, even if you wanted to say, all right, that should have been a loss, he still, I mean, he still has a good record. And I think he's just a guy that gets underrated, and I think he gets a little bit of a bad rap because he wasn't an explosive fighter with devastating knockout power.
No, he was a great technical fighter who landed a ton of punches.
Yeah,
but he was boring.
He just didn't. And if he, you know, if he had just a little bit more pop, you know, but behind his power punches, then he would have been really. I mean, because his ability to land punches,
but he didn't.
I know he didn't, but I mean, it's just like
if I had balls, you'd be my uncle. I watched
him hit people in the face. It's just like, that should be a fucking knockout. Why is the guy just kind of like,
because he just didn't have the power. Yes, he did not.
He did not. All right, man. We've covered the topics. You want to throw in a last word or anything?
Yeah. So with my NFL, my other underrated player. And this is kind of, well, so actually there were three that really kind of hemmed me up. So Rod Woodson, just because he's one of my all-time favorites as a Steeler fan, I could not.
I love that we both went Homer.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, fuck it, it's sports. It's scary. It's our show.
Right.
But there are two other people. One was Steven Jackson. Steven Jackson with the Rams. He's the Rams' all-time leading rusher, which I think is significant because do you know who the other two, the guys behind him are?
Eric Dickerson and Marshall Faulk, I'm thinking.
Yeah, they are.
That's okay. Okay. You know what I mean? I did not know that going in, but fuck.
Right. Those are the two guys that are behind Steven Jackson, not to mention that.
I had no idea his numbers were that good.
I mean, and he's now, the second leading.
There's a bit of a glitch there because Dickerson did get traded.
Right. But still, you know, and then there's. And then he was also, like, he's also the second leading, you know, receiving running back behind
Marshall Faulk, who, of course, by the way, is Marshall fucking Faulk.
Yes, but, and he was just a guy that I loved to watch play and that
he could go to the house anytime.
Towards, like, you know, like I would emulate because, I mean, like, I was a big running back and he was a big running back, you know. And, like, he was just an amazing guy to watch. He had the speed, he could catch. He could block, like he did, just was a complete back. And he did it for a while. And then, you know, his career faded. And I think he started like an art gallery or something like that.
Okay.
But him and then the other guy that I was kind of struggling with, there's a guy that I hated, but Derek Mason.
Running back from Tennessee?
No. He was a wide receiver for Tennessee and Baltimore.
Okay, all right, sorry.
And Derek Mason is one of those guys who was a thorn in the side of the Steelers for years with both teams. He's just one of those guys that statistically, you know, he's kind of middle of the pack, but he made big plays, and I don't think – he definitely doesn't get – like, he doesn't have the name recognition, but he's a guy that I just watched play up close because of the way the divisions were aligned at the time. And,
I just got his position wrong.
Yes. So, I mean, I think he's definitely underrated, but I ultimately went away from him. Steven Jackson was close, but, I mean, I think Rod Woodson should just be, you know, the...
Right.
You know.
Because, in my opinion, best corner, I would say defensive back ever to play. All right, man.
Fun.
We are at Whiskey Congress on Instagram and Twitter. Jim at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to call me an idiot, which I'm sure many of you will. Mm-hmm. Steve at WhiskeyCongress.com if you want to say bad things about him, but he's back in the gym and don't necessarily want to recommend that.
Jim, I don't rely on my strength. I don't intimidate people.
Oh, yes, you do.
I'm all about peace and love.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, and now that we're lying on the show, let's end it. Thanks for listening, and we are out.